Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Tonight, the fight for the NL East continues on FS1. MVP candidate Bryce Harper leads the Phillies against Freddie Freeman and the Braves. The action begins tonight at 6:30 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app.
Casper Cooling Collection. Go to Casper.com, put in the code HERD100. $100 off mattresses, duvets, pillows, everything. Casper.com, HERD100. So by the way, I do, every Tuesday, I do the Herd Hierarchy, and I spend a lot of time on it. What I try not to be is reactionary. Like Dallas. Okay, they're 11-1 under Dak Prescott against the NFC East. And when you have standalone games, everybody freaks out. And I said, yes, I have Dallas as a playoff team. So when I did the Herd Hierarchy today, I had Dallas at 10. The Raiders, pass rush. I wouldn't put them in there if they didn't have a pass rush. And then Arizona 8, Cleveland 7. Kansas City has led 65 straight games. Let's not overreact. Green Bay 5. Then I put Denver 4. And everybody's like, okay, now you're overreacting. But here is the balance. How do you reconcile this? They're doing everything well. You can't throw on them. They have a pass rush. They're running it. They're throwing it deep. They're doing it with injuries. So I have to reward Denver. And I thought about Denver. If they face Green Bay, who would win? And I think if they faced in Mile High, I think Denver beats Green Bay today. Well, Green Bay has one receiver, so they would put Kyle Fuller on Devontae Adams. They don't throw to anybody else.
I think my only pushback on the Broncos, and I agree, you got to reward wins.
They're doing everything.
But they beat the Giants, the Jets, and the Jaguars.
I understand. Those are Titans of the NFL.
The Panthers are undefeated.
Yeah, but the difference is, they are functioning. Denver is, by the way, Denver, I had Carolina and the Chargers 11-12. So I want to see Sam Darnold play from behind in a game, whereas I've seen Teddy Bridgewater play from behind in a game, and I still trust him. My point is, Darnold can be reckless when he trails. He becomes a little bit of a hero ball playmaker. He's going to trail against Dallas at some point. Let's see them. Without McCaffrey, he trails.
I would argue that the Panthers win over the Saints makes them more impressive than the 3 wins of the Broncos.
All right. So I went a little cray on Denver. That's all I'm saying.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Enjoy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is The Herd Line News.
Now, the Broncos play the Ravens on Sunday.
I like the Broncos to win. Where's the game at?
It's at Denver.
Yeah, I like Denver to win that game. I think Denver's for real. I think Denver wins that game. What is the line on? Let me guess the line. Denver's favored by 2.5.
They'll get us the line.
All right. 3. I think Denver's going to win that game. After that emotional Baltimore moment, I think Denver wins the game.
Okay. Well, the Chiefs have lost 2 straight games for the first time since early in the 2019 season, and Eric Bieniemy didn't struggle to put his finger on the reason why they've stumbled recently.
Always want to make sure we're doing a great job protecting the football, especially in those critical moments of the game. But we are who we are right now because of the turnovers. We're 1-2 team. And so we have to correct everything, make sure that we're getting back on track and getting this thing going in the right direction moving forward.
There's no line on that Broncos-Ravens game yet on Fox Bet. So the Chiefs had 4 turnovers this weekend against the Chargers.
Yeah, a lot.
And 2 turnovers late in the Ravens game week 1. So 6 total this season. Only 3 teams have more, and that is the Jaguars, the Jets, and the Titans.
Yeah, they've been a sloppy mess. I still put them in the top 10 because they lead every game. We know they're good, but they are generally turnovers. I mean, it'd be one thing if they had a rookie quarterback throwing picks. Fumbles work their way around. A lot of fumbling is randomness.
Yeah.
And so I don't like pin. Oh, that's a team that fumbles.
Well, and just like, how do you fumble? Is someone punching the ball out?
Right.
Like, or are you just, dropping it? I mean, they also rank 29th in red zone defense. So a Chiefs opponent has scored a touchdown on 12 of 13 red zone drives, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
So they do have some issues. Overall, we know that the Chiefs are well coached, and we know what they're capable of.
Yeah.
Maybe it's some, you know, stumbling early. I'm with you. I'm not going to completely lose faith in them, but they do look like they are a little bit vulnerable.
Yeah.
More than we're used to seeing, and they've got to clean that up. There's no odds yet on the Chiefs-Eagles game this weekend, but I would imagine that the Chiefs would take advantage of the Eagles in that game.
Yeah.
So the Jets are 0-3 for a third straight year, but defensive tackle Quinnen Williams said the team doesn't deserve criticism from fans and the media.
Oh, okay.
Said people who have negative stuff to say about Zach and the team, we're not listening to it.
All right.
We want to keep getting better every single day, because if you listen to negative things, you eventually believe in those negative things and go into a tank about those negative things.
Yeah, true.
For me, for this team and for Zach, we're not listening to the negative bleep that is being set.
Well, I will say this. They're not doing Zach a huge favor. A lot of straight drop with a bad O-line. Be nice to move him a little bit. Now, I said this. This was my prediction. I said, even if Robert Saleh makes it as a head coach, there's an argument to be made, a pretty strong one. He's going to be the fourth best coach in that division for the first couple years.
Sure.
Never been a head coach. He jokes about it. And I don't think there's any question. Zach Wilson, if he works, would be the second best quarterback in the division at best. So this is a quarterback coaching league. And we don't think Zach's going to be the second best quarterback first year. Eventually he could be. So my takeaway is you got to kind of throw this year out for Zach Wilson. I'm not making heavy judgments, even though I said I think he's Johnny Manziel with a better arm. He's a little bit of a show-off, too much for my taste. I think when you have a rookie coach, coordinators, and rookie quarterback, throw the year out. I'm not judging anything.
No, I'm with you. I don't care about what happens this year with Jacksonville or with the Jets. Now, I do want to see a little bit of growth towards the end of the season, get a little bit more stable. I would prefer to see cultural growth, right? That's what we felt about Brian Flores. You want to see cultural growth. You want to see them start, you know, losing close.
Yes.
Start to see some camaraderie within the team.
Yeah.
Don't let it get to a desperate situation full of despair. That's what I don't want to see. But yes, there's nothing that you should take away from Zach Wilson this year. Of course, he's going to have games where he throws four interceptions. They're not a good team. The same with Jacksonville. This is not a good team. That's the reason why they were picked at the top of the draft. Mm-hmm. Not a good team. There's nothing to completely overreact to, especially in week three. And he's right. They shouldn't be listening to negativity. That's not going to help you at this point.
Yeah.
It's not like it's a veteran team that's struggling. You know, it's not Kansas City where like, okay, something we need to work on here. We need to tweak some things. This isn't who we are. This is who you are, and you need to develop and get better. But we have to be a little bit patient with them. So this is going to be the story for this weekend. Tom Brady will be making his return to Foxborough. And on his Let's Go podcast with Larry Fitzgerald and Jim Gray, he acknowledged there will be different kinds of emotions as he enters Gillette.
I know that locker room. I know that home locker room. I know that home tunnel. I know, you know, which way the wind blows. I know everything about that. I know the way it smells. I know what a night game's like. I know what the fans are going to sound like. So in some ways, that'll be really unique. I've never had that experience going to, you know, New England will be a first time for me being on the other sideline. So, you know, I'm not going to necessarily reminisce. I don't think this is the moment for that.
He also said he doesn't expect fans to cheer for him because they are there to cheer for his own team. Although I do imagine he's going to get a nice welcome.
Yeah.
He did play 20 seasons there. He also talked about his dad mentioning that this return was a vindication game.
Comments made by Thomas Edward Brady, a 77-year-old insurance company CEO who should know better at this point in his life, doesn't necessarily reflect the views or positions held by his son, Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. So furthermore, should Tom Sr. continue to speak out on behalf of his son without the express written consent, Tom Jr. reserves the right to eventually put him in a home against his will. That's all I have to say.
So Tom Sr. does not speak for Tom Brady. They are currently favored by 6.5, according to Fox Bet.
That is funny.
It is. He's over it.
That's great stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Every Tuesday is going to be the final 30 minutes of our show. We couldn't be happier. Fox Sports NFL analyst Mark Sanchez, 10 years in the NFL, conference championship games, had the Seahawks, Vikings. Let me address the Jets real quick because it's not a team we're going to talk about much this year. But I will say this, when I watched the Jets against Denver and that pass rush, I thought, now come on now. You got to give the kid a shot. It was a very static offense.
Yep.
I did not think that Zach Wilson, at this stage in his life, on the road even had a chance with that game plan? Am I being too critical of the, you know, I'm not there for the game plan, but it was a lot of stuff on, dependent on him making a great throw.
No doubt. They relied on him a lot. They put a lot on his plate. However, to get, you know, you're always going to be able to get quick game. You're always going to be able to get some nakeds and stuff. But to get into your play action game, you got to run the ball well. They're not just blowing the doors off in the run game either. So it's a balance. And when you get down the way they get down, your only options are to drop back and pass, which is very difficult, not just for quarterbacks, for rookie quarterbacks. I mean, it's difficult for quarterbacks in general, I should say. But for rookie quarterbacks, when the defense knows that you're dropping back every single play for the next 3-4 drives because they're up by 21 or whatever, those defensive ends are like, all they need to do is not run into each other because they pin their ears back, put their hand in the dirt, and it's a track meet. And as soon as you snap the ball, they're hauling ass to 9.5 yards deep, and all they have to do is miss each other and try and hit the quarterback on the way.
So it's interesting you mentioned this because we saw it last night with Dak and Jalen Hurts. Dak started 72 games. He's a grown-up. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yep.
So I know we love to criticize Jimmy Garoppolo, and Aaron deserves to be the star for winning the game. But Garoppolo, in that stadium, to your point, mm-hmm. faced Green Bay, who, by the way, had a pretty darn good pass rush in that game. He was hit 10 times. And Garoppolo made 4 big boy throws.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, and by the way, Eric Stokes, that rookie corner for Green Bay, can play.
Oh, yeah.
And Jair Alexander, maybe the first best corner in the league. And I just want you to talk about this. To your point, Garoppolo's going back, no running. I thought we all can criticize Jimmy Garoppolo, but you've been in those moments. Those are hard throws. It is a Sunday night.
Oh, yeah.
There's a little wind. Take me to what you saw when he's doing that.
So what Jimmy did so masterfully is, one, he won the game.
He did.
Save for Aaron Rodgers, okay, and a first ballot Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champ, MVP. If that guy's not playing against him, I don't know if anybody else wins that game. Maybe Tom, maybe Russ.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I'm not sure.
Maybe, and this is because I'm a little biased, but maybe Josh Allen.
Right.
Because he's got the juice to wing it downfield. But other than that, I mean, Jimmy won the game.
He won the
everything.
Game.
If I'm his quarterback coach, if I'm his coordinator, I'm feeling great. And it sucks because you don't get the result you wanted, but the process was there. Because when you face a good defense like Green Bay or a good organization, a good team, eventually, right, the first, second, third quarters, you're going to get your gimmies. You're going to get your breather plays. I'm talking schemed and dialed up completions that are just no-brainers. Easy quick screens to the back, you know, RPOs, boom. You're stacking completions. But at a certain point, you're going to have to sustain a 10-plus play drive. You're going to have to convert 2 to 3 third downs with drop-back pass game, which means you got to drop back, diagnose the defense, make the right read, find the right, go through your progression because number one's probably not open. Now you got to make an accurate throw and then do it all over again. And that means everybody up front has to do their job. That means the receiver's got to be at their right depth. When they put you into a drop-back pass game mode, it's on. All 11 have to be just nails. And that is the toughest part of the game. That's where you get the nitty-gritty, almost like postseason baseball where it's like 2 to 3 and, oh, we got to sub a pitcher for one batter and boom, we're in and out. Like, that's where you get to the minutia of this game, and it's drop-back passing.
How long did it take you to get there? Because I thought,
God.
You were in some big games.
Sure.
And you had a couple of big drives in Foxborough.
Yeah. And because we were so heavy run, play action, nakeds, getting me out on the edge, quick game, that when we did drop back, we would gash some people because it was rare. We didn't have to do it a lot. But at some point, you're going to have to do it consistently. And that's what separates these quarterbacks. That's what brings that top 5, that top 10 group. That's what separates them, is that they can do it over and over again. Case in point, Kirk Cousins last week? Oh, man. That dude was on fire.
But he had Dalvin Cook.
He didn't have Dalvin last week. He had Madison and Abdullah. So they ran the ball well. And credit to Clint Kubiak, we called the game. So I was like, in it. And I was so impressed at how dedicated and how determined they were to stick to the screen game, because it kept the pass rush off balance. I mean, they must have run 5 or 6 screens to the running back And they hit every time. Screens to the tight end. At one point, they all out blitz Kirk Cousins, and he's got no chance in the world. Boom, there goes Conklin running out the back door. And he floats this ball, which took everything he had, because he doesn't have a Josh Allen arm, you know, this massive, you know, throw it 70 yards down the field, no problem arm. And he flicked this thing out to his left and just like nice and light, boom, right in front of the tight end. And there he goes, just scampering for a first down.
Let me talk about this game, because I, among the rest of the nation, I told my staff this the other day. I had the Seahawks Vikings over in the corner, mm-hmm. and I was really on the Rams box.
That's a good one.
I theorized from what I watched off to the right with the Seahawks Vikings is that what's happening to Seattle, it's now become a trend in 3 weeks. Time of possession is a disaster. So Russell becomes a spectator.
Yeah.
And then when he does get inserted in, there is a sense, I've got to make stuff happen.
Oh, yeah.
We will not get the ball back. So I think it asks a lot for a quarterback to watch for 12 minutes, get cool, come back in, mm-hmm. and play against a pretty good pass rush. That's hard.
No doubt.
Second thing, there is a psychology to it where the offensive coordinator's thinking, we may not get this thing back.
Right.
You overthink the offense. You get too clever. So what are you seeing? Because the Seahawks, is this just what they're going to be? A dynamic play making offense, but they can't everything. Minnesota had 12 play drives, mm-hmm. 9 minute drives.
And credit to Minnesota for sustaining those drives, because that against a tough defense like that, that puts a shell over the top and just forces you to convert and convert and convert. Constantly. That is so tiring.
That's Pete's defense.
It is Pete. It's Belichick at times. I mean, when you put everybody up there and bank on getting to the quarterback before he gets the ball off, that's a serious gamble now. So now the trend is like, okay, just make him do it 15 times on a drive. Go ahead. Make all 11 guys do the right thing 15 plays in a row. I guarantee that offense is going to screw up before the defense does. That's kind of the mentality. But with Seattle, the first quarter, they owned the time of possession. I mean, it felt like the Vikings weren't even on the field. And then the rest of the game, it completely flipped. And to me, the turning point was they extended a drive, and Ugo Amadi, one of the defensive backs, holds and extends a drive. On a play, he's on the backside of the route. Like, the guy, Cousins is looking the other way. There was no chance that Thielen was getting that ball, or Jefferson, or whoever was in the slot. And he's holding him like hard. Boom. The ref throws a flag away from the call. You're like, what happened? Boom. Extends the drive. From that point on, it was 17-7. Never looked back. Seattle barely had the ball after that. And Kirk Cousins went into Super Kirk. I mean, it was insane how surgical he was, how decisive he was when it wasn't open. I mean, he's not flashy, right? And I said it on the broadcast. I said he's analog. He's not digital. He's probably got a record player at the house.
Right.
You know, like, he's old school, and he's just going to do it. He's going to be steady on the boat. He doesn't need to be, you know, flashy and go 150 miles an hour, but he ain't going to go 30 miles an hour either. He's just going to be right along the speed limit, just take you right to your destination. Yeah. It was so impressive, because it's hard to play like that.
So Rams, Bucks, I said, I don't think anybody in the league could have beaten the Rams. They had one penalty. They won everything.
They're sharp.
They didn't have any drop passes. It was the sharpest singular game mm-hmm. I've seen a team play. When you've had one or two of these where you just, I mean, when you beat the Patriots in Foxborough and you walk off the field, did you know you were going to get that on Wednesday at practice? Or does that thing just happen? Because I thought the Rams were virtually flawless.
I would guarantee that if you asked them about their practice the week before, it was dialed in. And
really?
Of course, because you hear former Super Bowl champs talk about this every week, the year after they win, and they're trying to repeat, you get everybody's best shot. Like, that's everybody's extra divisional rival. Like, even when you're not in the division, it doesn't matter.
So Tampa got the Rams' best game.
They got the very best, and they're going to continue to get everyone's very best. I guarantee you, the Patriots, they tighten up this week. They're going to be ready to go, right? Just because, one, it's Tom. Two, they just won a Super Bowl. He's coming home, all that. That adds to guys' focus. It's like, do I want to go, like, hang out tonight and like go out and grab a drink, or is like, yeah, I should probably study tonight.
Yeah.
You know, guys, that really affects the way they go into the game. It's serious. It's real.
I mean,
they're human, right?
The average NFL player is 27, handsome, and wealthy, and he has options. not every player does extra film every game.
No,
I've had players, linebackers, say when they face Peyton Manning, you stay in that week.
Oh, yeah. It's just...
you don't want to be humiliated on television.
Exactly. And they know that guy can he'll wear them out on Sunday if they weren't ready.
All right, good stuff. Mark Sanchez, more with him in a second.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Dak looked great. The Cowboys, to me, surprisingly rolled Philadelphia last night, though Dak is 11-1 against the NFC East. I don't want to make too much of it because whenever the Cowboys win a standalone game against a lousy divisional rival, America explodes. What did you see from Dak, who looked very comfortable to me?
From Dak and Kellen Moore, his coordinator, he put him in great spots. And when Dak went to the line with multiple plays, he got him in the right play. When they're in cover two and they're trying to play deep and just worry about your quick game and, you know, you have numbers to run, Dak got you in a running play. When the rush started to get to him a little bit, boom, they hit him with the screen, kept the rush off balance. When they try to play quarters and get essentially your safeties involved in the run game, there's the play to CeeDee Lamb. They said, all right, we'll pin one of your safeties down and let CeeDee run right by somebody who's flat-footed deep in the secondary. Bam, nailed it. I mean, it was almost as if Kellen and Dak had the defensive calls from the Eagles. It was impressive the way they spread the ball around and had the answer for every single coverage. You want to play single high zone and play off on the corners? Go. Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, let's go. Go beat them in the flat. And getting the tight ends involved. I mean, they just – and Zeke, too. Zeke had that forward lean, that low lean, that aggressive. I mean, he looked like he did his rookie year.
Mark Sanchez joining us. Do you think any of it was pre-snap? Or they just had a better game plan?
I think, one, they had a great game plan, but a lot of the plays where Dak goes in, you heard Greasy on the call say, when they got to change their call now because everybody knows that we're talking about it, but when he said Picasso, right? Picasso's a painter.
Right.
Painters draw. They run a draw play. Right? Like you got to remember, we're football players too. Like, don't overcomplicate it. So let's just keep it real simple and make sure everybody knows what's going on. And so, you know, those were awesome calls at the right time to just keep people off balance, and he kept them on schedule. And if they got off schedule, he was okay, cool. It's third in a Walmart parking lot, third and long. I don't have any calls on the sheet for this, so just get me some yards. Let's not take a sack. Let's not turn the ball over. Kick the ball down there. We'll play the field position game and let our defense get after them because they're energized. They love their defensive coordinator. They're creating turnovers and they're helping us. It's not a liability on defense right now for them like it was the year before.
Yeah, they do look. They have more takeaways. I said this after week one. My eyes are telling me Dallas is younger, a little they're a little faster than last year. Mm-hmm. The closing speed from the corners. Diggs is a really good player.
He sure is.
He's really, really good.
And Dan Quinn, that's like the Pete Carroll model, the Dan Quinn model.
Play fast.
Yes, play fast. And it was so funny. We talked to Bobby Wagner last week about like tackling and what did Coach Carroll tell you? What does Ken Norton Jr. tell you? What does Dan Quinn tell you about tackling? And he told us the story. He said, one of these young guys came up a couple years ago, said, man, you're one of the best tacklers in the league. How do you do it? What do you go left foot forward? Like, do you think about what shoulder or what side of your head you're going to hit him with? And he goes, no, man, just get his ass on the ground. And the kid was like, he said the look of disappointment in the kid's face because he thought he was going to have this profound, like, you know, moment to learn how to tackle. And he said, dude, you can't overcomplicate that. He goes, as soon as I worry about what foot's forward, what shoulder I'm going to hit him with, what side is my head on, he goes, the guy's just run over you. He's 5 yards past you. He said, just get his ass on the ground.
Yeah, play fast. Awesome. Play fast.
That's right.
Mike Bellotti, Oregon, used to say, play 1 inch out of control.
Yep.
Just play as fast as you can.
That's right.
Jalen Hurts, what worries me, Mark, lack of accuracy on layup throws. I'm worried about that.
He could be a little better with ball placement. I think the process is there. He's making the right reads. I thought the underthrown ball for the interception was right there. It was great. He knew it was one-on-one. His receiver's winning. He looks the safety off so he doesn't have to worry about the safety. He does everything right, and he missed. He just missed right. the throw. And that's a physical mistake. You got to remember with interceptions, the best way I can break it down is it's either a bad decision, as in you force it into coverage or it wasn't open. It's a bad throw or a physical mistake. Or number three, a really good defensive play. And those are pretty rare. For a defensive player to do something when you make a good read and make a good throw, for him to just make this out of this world freakish play and pick yeah. you off, the Darrell Revises of the world, you know, those kind of guys, okay, those are going to happen every once in a while. But when you stare down quick game to the left and they're in zone coverage and Diggs has his eyes on you and he reads your quick drop because you looked at it right away, he reads your quick game steps and he knows, boom, he jumps it, That's just a physical mistake that he's got to correct. He's got to keep his eyes down the field for 1 second, boom, and then get over to where he wants to go. But those are little things. I think they're physical mistakes that he can clean up. It's not – I wouldn't hit the panic button. They're correctable errors.
By the way, Mac Jones facing – we got a minute left. Mac Jones facing Tom Brady in Foxborough. He's going to be nervous, right? Like Mac Jones – do you remember the first time you faced Brady?
Against Brady, against Carson Palmer, against Manning, like as a young quarterback – you find yourself when you're supposed to be looking at the pages, like they used to be printouts. They weren't on the iPad right, or right, whatever right. it was before. So you find yourself kind of watching the offense on the big screen and Shoddy and Coach Kavanaugh would be like, hey, let's go. We're worried about the defense, not the other team's quarterback. All right. You're not playing the other team's quarterback. So it's hard to keep the blinders on, but that's going to be, you know, that's going to be part of his focus.
Yeah. I mean, I think for all these young guys, I think Dak Prescott was a great reminder last night, and Jimmy Garoppolo and Derek Carr in their games, and Aaron.
God, Carr's playing so well.
Yeah, this is hard. Quarterbacking is really hard. Let's be patient. But, you know, it's so funny. We all want to bang on Garoppolo and Derek Carr because they didn't come into the league as a top 10 pick. Those are good quarterbacks. Derek Carr is playing great.
Put Cousins in there, too. Don't forget him.
What did we call him yesterday? Kirk DeSoleil. That's what he was yesterday. He was so good this weekend. All right, by the way, Mark is doing the Washington Falcons game Sunday, 1 Eastern on Fox. Better night's sleep. It's the Casper Cooling Collection. Casper.com, code HERD100 for $100 off select mattresses, pillows, and sheets. It is great seeing you, man. Tuesday, Mark Sanchez will be joining us every Tuesday. We absolutely love it. And for Joey and Ryan and everybody here, we're done today. David Carr, Kevin Clark, Andrew Whitworth, Mark Sanchez, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd.